What category do you put Jesus in? Stay tuned. Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul is next. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Renewing Your Mind with teacher and theologian Dr. R.C. Sproul. Dr. Sproul is also the preacher and teacher of St. Andrew's Chapel in Sanford, Florida. The world has tried to put Jesus in a host of categories. Some say he was a good moral teacher. Others in history have labeled him as a disillusioned visionary, while others, as of late, have labeled him a social activist. Those who were closest to Jesus had the most difficulty in finding a suitable category for him. What manner of man is this that even the winds and sea obey, they asked. But it wasn't merely his power over nature that perplexed the disciples. It was something else, and that something else is what people hate most about Jesus. Today on Renewing Your Mind, Dr. Sproul will teach us why both demons and disciples were struck with fear when they were exposed to the holiness of Jesus.
In the history of theoretical thought, when we think of the 18th century, we think of that watershed movement called the Aufklärung, or the Enlightenment, that began in Germany and swiftly moved to France and to England, in which the great discovery of the French encyclopedias was this. They came to the conclusion that with the advent of modern science, we no longer need the God hypothesis to explain the origin of the universe or the origin of human life. And so with these thinkers, God was seen as a vestigial remnant of a former worldview that could now easily and rightly be discarded. Well, what happened in the following century, in the 19th century, was in Western Europe particularly a concern among sociologists, anthropologists, and particularly among philosophers to answer this vexing question. Since there is no God, and now we know that, how then can we explain the universal phenomenon of religion? How is it, in comparative studies of the 19th century, as the world was growing smaller and cultures were bumping into each other like never before, that the scientists were saying everywhere we go, even to the most remote corners of the globe, we find people practicing some kind of religion. And so it seems that human beings are not so much Homo sapiens, but rather homo religiosus. They are incurably religious. And you see the vexation. The question that they had to answer was this: if there's no God, why is there so much religion? How can we account for this virtually universal factor? And so many of the thinkers of the 19th century undertook the task of answering that question. And you've seen or heard some of those answers set forth by Ludwig Feuerbach or Karl Marx or Friedrich Nietzsche and others of that era. And almost to a man, they agreed that the reason for the provocation and invention of religion is simply this: fear. That human beings are fragile. We know that we are finite, we are dependent, and that every moment we face the ever dangerous possibility of our own destruction. And it also would seem, particularly to people in the 19th century, that nature itself is red in claw and fang, and that the forces of nature are so threatening that there are massive earthquakes, there are floods, there are hurricanes, there are fires, and worst of all, there is the problem of disease, where plagues can come and wipe out half the population of a given area without warning. And so life in this world is a dangerous thing. And again, to a man, those who postulated an answer for the rise of religion, though they came at it from different directions, agreed on the point that religion is invented out of some kind of human psychological need. We need something to help us cope in this dangerous environment of the world in which we live. Something that will calm our spirits, a bromide that will dull our senses, opium that will put us to sleep in the midst of these dreadful, threatening realities. Well, perhaps no one thought more deeply about this question than Sigmund Freud, the father of modern psychoanalysis. In his two little books, Civilization and Its Discontent and The Future of an Illusion, Freud set forth this thesis. He said, we as human beings understand that we are often frightened or threatened by other human beings. But we have learned how to cope with menacing people. If you come up to me and present a hostile visage to me, I can try to put you at ease by flattering you, telling you I'm the president of your fan club, how much I love you. And if that doesn't work, I can open up my wallet and I can attempt to bribe you and say, if you'll be nice to me, I'll give you some money. And we have all of these different mechanisms that we use to diffuse hostile people. And Freud said that what we do in learning how to handle threats from people, we then transfer to impersonal, non-personal, threatening forces of nature, such as the wind and the fire and the plague. And so the first step in the origin of religion is the personalization of nature. Religion begins with animism, where we impute little animated spirits that live within the fire or in the storm or in the sea, so that we can deal with them not as blind, impersonal forces, but as people. And then to make things simpler, we invent a supreme person who rules over all of these forces of nature and invest that God, as it were, with power and personality, so that to make things simple, instead of pleading with the tornado not to destroy our house, we pray to the God of the tornado, or the God of the storm, the God of the fire, the God of the earthquake. And so there's a twofold operation, Freud says here. First, we personalize nature, then we sacralize it. We invest it with a concept of divinity. And hence, religion arises. Well, I think it's true that we are afraid of the threatening forces of nature. And I think that it is also true that on many occasions people turn to religion out of psychological need to cope with those dangerous matters that we live with every day. But my question for Freud, for Marx, and Nietzsche, and others, is if we are prone to invent a God who will rescue us from the forces of nature, why in the world, in our creative imagination, in the inventing of gods, would we ever invent one who is holy? Because if we examine human fears, there is nothing about which human beings are more phobic than the holy. Nothing threatens us more than that which is holy. For the simple reason, dear friends, because we are not holy. Now, there are three episodes in the ministry of Jesus that I want to look at briefly that bring this point home. The first one occurs very early in the ministry of Jesus while he's still in the Galilean period and he is ministering in Capernaum. and he enters into the synagogue, and there he discovers a man who is possessed by a demon. And as soon as the demon sees Christ entering into the synagogue, he begins to cry out. And he says to Jesus, "What are you doing here, Jesus, Son of God? Are you here to destroy us? Are you here to torment us before our time?" And then they address Jesus, and listen to what they say. "We know who you are. We know who you are. You're the Holy One of God." I find it fascinating that the first beings who understood that aspect of the person of Christ during his incarnation were the demons. They hated that which was holy, but they also recognized the holy when it appeared. And then there is the episode that we read about in the scriptures a few moments earlier, where after Jesus had finished the ministry there along the Sea of Galilee, he and his disciples set out in their boat to go out onto the lake, which is a perilous lake even to this day because of the topography of the land, where wind tunnels formed sudden, unknown in advance storms that would come up. And so one of these storms that came up off of the Mediterranean occurred after Jesus had fallen asleep in the back of the boat. And the sea begins to churn, and the winds are blowing at gale force. And it is so dangerous at this moment that the Bible tells us that the disciples, who were veteran fishermen, who had been on this body of water time and time again, became afraid, terrified by these circumstances. And they were afraid that they were going to perish. The very thing that Freud was saying motivates religion is the fear of dying at the hands of a ruthless force of nature. Now nature is threatening the destruction of the disciples. So what do? They go to the back of the boat and they rouse Jesus from his slumber. "Wake up, Master! Master! Do something, or we perish." Well, you know what happened. Jesus awakened. He apprised the situation. He saw the storm, the winds, the sea. And he started to speak to the water and to the wind. He utters a command to the storm and he says, "Peace, be still." And instantly, the wind ceased. It is so calm, there's not even a zephyr in the air, and the water becomes like glass. Now, what do you think the reaction of the disciples would be at that moment? You would think they'd want to take up an offering. You would think that they would throw their sou'westers in the air, and they would be yelling, "Thank you, Jesus! Wow!" The astonishing thing that the New Testament records here is that after the storm was over, the disciples became exceedingly afraid. Do you get that? They were terrified already by the storm. But when the object of their terror is removed from them, instead of their fears being diminished, as Freud would have imagined, they were intensified. Why? Well, the answer is found here in the text. They say to each other, "What manner of man is this?" Do you know that when we meet people of all different backgrounds and varieties and stripes and personalities, we're sizing them up. From the first moment that we meet them, the moment of the first impression, we begin to sort them out according to the observable personality traits that they manifest, and we try to find a category that we put them in. Oh, this is an extrovert. Oh, that's an introvert. Oh, this one's high maintenance. Oh, this one over here is very kind. This one's pushy. And we have categories for all those different personality traits. But all of a sudden, the disciples ran out of categories. They had no category for Jesus. And so they said, what kind of person, what manner of person is this? That even the wind and the sea obey him. Who has that kind of authority over nature to command its behavior? Except the one who is the author of nature. You see, when we talk about the holy, we're talking about the other, that which transcends all earthly reality, that which is above and beyond the physical, that enters into the metaphysical, above and beyond nature, that brings us into the realm of supernature. That's what the holy is about. It refers to the otherness of God, that sense in which God's being differs from our being. But in this encounter, when the deity of Christ breaks through the veil of his humanity, and for a second his disciples glimpse who it is they're dealing with, they shrink in horror, in terror. What manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? The answer, dear friends, is the one who is holy. One last narrative that we encounter in the New Testament that displays this also takes place on the Sea of Galilee. Well, we are told that the disciples had been out all night fishing and to no avail. They came back to the shore and their nets were completely empty. It was an evening of frustration, of economic, financial disaster. They made their livelihood through the catching of fish, and on this occasion they came up empty. And as they now in their downcast demeanor approach the shore, Jesus is standing there. He understands the situation. He gives Peter a little tip about fishing. He said, Simon, cast your net on that side of the boat. And you can feel in the text, you can feel Peter's reaction, can't you? You know how Peter is known for his impetuosity? I can just sense him bristling when Jesus tells him how to fish. Jesus, you're a master theologian, but when it comes to fishing, we're the professionals. I mean, that's what he's thinking. You know that's what he's thinking. But he says to the other disciples, humor him. Put the nets where he says to put the nets. And so you know what happens. They throw the net on that side of the boat, and every fish in the Sea of Galilee jumps into the net. So that net is burst, and they take another net, and they fill that one up, and they pull the nets into the boat, and the boats begin to sink. There are so many fish that respond to the direction of Christ. Now, what fascinates me about that story is not the miraculous manifestation of Jesus' fishing ability. What I find fascinating is the reaction of Peter. Now, remember, Peter was a Jew, and he was a businessman. And you would have supposed that what he would have done after that display is that he would have said to Jesus, look, let's make a deal. I'll tell you what, we'll go into a partnership 50-50, and all you have to do is come down here once a month and do this little shtick here, and half the proceeds of the business will be yours. That's what I would have done. But that's not what Peter did. Do you remember what he did? He looked at Jesus, and he said, depart from me. Depart from me, for I am a sinful man. You're making me very uncomfortable. please leave. Nothing makes a sinful person more uncomfortable than the presence of the holy. You know, there's many phobias that afflict people in our culture. Not too long ago, I saw a list of them in the newspaper where they listed the top 10 in terms of frequency. In that list, in the top 5, was the phobia known as xenophobia. Xenophobia is the fear of strangers. The fear of people who are different from us. People from different cultures. Because we don't know what they're thinking, what they're going to do, because they don't do things the way we do them. And the ultimate stranger, the ultimate alien that has ever visited this planet was Jesus of Nazareth. Isn't it fascinating? You read the story of Jesus and you read how the children loved him, how the downcast, downtrodden people flocked to him, how the Amharets, the people of the land, came to him. Blessed Jesus, meek and mild. Well, if he was so meek and he was so mild, why were people screaming for his blood? Why would the religious authorities not rest until he was removed from their scene? The reason is this, that nothing exposes the counterfeit faster than the genuine. And those who had their status in the society based upon their religious piety were the ones who hated Jesus, because theirs was phony and his was real. And when the Holy One of God came to this world, xenophobia was experienced with a vengeance. And the stranger had to go.
You're listening to Renewing Your Mind with Dr. R.C. Sproul, teaching us about the holiness of Jesus. Right now, we'd like to tell you about today's special offer for a donation of any amount. It's the Portrait of God DVD series. Since the dawn of time, God has made his character known throughout creation. We see his power and wisdom in the created order. The punishment of the wicked reflects his wrath and holiness, and his love and mercy are displayed in the history of redemption. In this series of lectures from Ligonier Ministries' 2004 National Conference, J. Ligon Duncan III, Sinclair Ferguson, W. Robert Godfrey, John MacArthur, R.C. Sproul, and R.C. Sproul, Jr., discuss God's glorious character. They explain how God's attributes are defined according to Scripture and critique recent movements that would question the biblical definition of God's wrath, love, immutability, and other crucial aspects of his character. The 15-part series, A Portrait of God, is available on DVD for a donation of any amount. So call now. Our toll-free number is 1-800-435-4343. Once again, that's 1-800-435-4343. Or you can go online to rymoffer.com. That's RYM as in renewing your mind, and the word offer.com. Again, that's RYMOFFER.com. Remember to please allow 6 to 8 weeks for delivery. As we've heard today, even the demons understand the holiness of God. That's why they shudder in his presence. But what about Christians? Unfortunately, many Christians don't have a biblical understanding of this attribute of God. The Holiness of God is Dr. Sproul's most popular and enduring series. Literally, thousands of people have testified to a transforming encounter with God through this series. This classic series can help you better understand the biblical picture of God's awesome holiness and why it's so foundational to God-centered, God-honoring theology and Christian living. Normally priced at $24, the 6-part Holiness of God series is available on three CDs for $19.20. Remember, this price does not include shipping. To order, give us a call at 1-800-435-4343. Again, that's 1-800-435-4343. Or visit us online at ligonier.org. That's ligonier.org. That'll bring a close to this Thursday edition of Renewing Your Mind. Thank you for being with us. Join us again tomorrow as we peer into the love lives of some notable Christian leaders. Be assured that this broadcast has been approved for all audiences. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries with Dr. R.C. Sproul.